19th of August 2020. This is the second part of a conversation with Arthur Donald Hunter about his experience of working at the IEE for all of his working life. Over to you, Dad.
Just talk at it.
Yeah, just talk at it.
The admin side of the IE, of course, had to keep up with this expansion and also with the growth of membership from some 22,000 in 1943 to over 50,000 in the mid-60s.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided that a punch card system would be the answer, and I was invited to explore the market and come up with a proposal. ICT, as they then were, seemed to fit the bill, and the writing of systems and transferring the records commenced, with a deadline of December to prepare the subscription invoices, and from January address publication wrappers and local centre mailing. A substantial proportion of the costs of the equipment was offset by savings we achieved in postal charges by pre-sorting our mailings into post towns. This was before postcodes.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Which we had been unable to do using the old addressograph system.
I'm going to move this here, Dad, so it doesn't wobble when you're talking. It'll still pick you up. Yeah.
Okay. The natural progression from punch cards was to acquire a computer, since we could see the benefits of computerising all our office routine work. But keeping a mainframe occupied was economically was a problem. Through ICL, we found a firm of accountants who were in a similar position and were seeking a partner. A computer was installed, which took up a substantial part of the Savoy Place basement.
Yeah, that's what I remember as going in and seeing it.
Yeah.
It was huge.
The transfer from punch cards ran smoothly.
Yeah.
As did the transfer of our manual accounting and budgeting systems.
Mm-hmm.
A major benefit from the transfers from the manual systems was that a substantial number of old Spanish practices were dropped.
Old Spanish practice?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
We've always done it that way.
Oh, I see. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So it was it was like a new broom, was it?
Yeah.
You got, Yeah.
You analysed why you wanted something.
Yes, not just because...
Instead of just because it had always been like
that.
Yeah. We were then in a position to offer both programming services and computer time to our sister institutions.
Okay, that's...
At a suitable charge, of course.
Yes. So that was an income generation... ...potential as well. Very canny.
But, of course, this was contrary to our situation as a charity.
Yes, you couldn't do... Yeah.
So we had to form a company.
Okay, I get you.
In order to do this work for other people.
Yeah.
And accordingly... with the agreement of the charity commissioners and the Inland Revenue, Peter Peregrinus was formed.
Okay.
which was a company that dealt with all this work, which had nothing to do with the IE's mainframe.
Yes.
Requirements. All the profits made by Peter Peregrinus were paid to the institution under a deed of covenant. I acted as secretary to the committee and was company secretary of PPL, working with such commercially experienced men as Sir Ben Barnett, Cam Lucas and Len Drucker, which I found both an education and a delight. Meanwhile, the abstract computerisation was proceeding apace under Ron Smith, an assistant secretary, and when completed, offices were set up in the USA and in Holland to provide marketing and backup services to inspect customers. Setting up a company in Holland and treading a tricky path with the Inland Revenue Service in the States to preserve our not-for-profit status was a good learning experience.
Yes, yeah, I imagine.
Our relations with the American Institute of Physics were somewhat strained at this time, since they thought that the physics part of INSPEC should have been theirs. We enlisted the help of the British Embassy in Washington and they helped
to resolve that then, did they? They helped to resolve that, did they?
Because there wasn't room for the two of us to launch the same sort of service. They were going to duplicate what we were already doing. I very much enjoyed working with a number of committees, finance, executive and investment committee, finance, executive and investment, all of whom consisted of senior engineers who were determined to advance the standing of the IE and secure its financial security. Reserves were built up and invested in new projects, closely monitored against budgets. Failures, such as a members' book club, were quickly shut down after a previously set time. On the other hand, electronics letters, which started disappointingly slowly, was perceived as a major contribution to the profession and was allowed to continue and in time became financially successful. Things quietened down after George Gainsborough retired and Howard Lusty took over. Probably a good thing after a period of such strong growth.
Yeah.
But of course, much less exciting.
Yes, yeah.
It's probably worth knowing that even after his years with Arnold Weinstock's GEC, he was impressed with the budgetary and financial control being exercised at the IE. Blowing me old trumpet.
Oh, yeah. But you did really enjoy working with George Gainsborough, didn't you?
Yes. Yes, yeah. You could tell from all this that I thoroughly enjoyed my life at the IE.
Yeah.
And the enthusiasm of our senior members fostered great loyalty with the staff.
Yeah.
Which was passed down the line to the newest recruit. From my brief visits to Stevenage,
you worked in Stevenage for a while. You took the finance department to Stevenage, didn't you?
Hitchin.
That was in the 70s, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. 72.
Yeah, that's right, because that's when I went off to university, yeah.
Yeah. And from my visits to Stevenage in the 2000s, it would appear that this loyalty and enthusiasm continues, which is a good recipe for continuing growth and success. That's it. And if we tidy that out, we don't really need to send it.
No. So you've read that out. That's quite interesting. Dad, I wondered if you could just add the bit I was thinking would be interesting for people to know about was the more social side of the IEE. And, you know, the children's party and the and the fact that you could all have lunch there at
which
lunchtime.
Which you used to go to.
Yes, yeah, because I think these things are unusual nowadays.
Yes.
So there was a Christmas party, wasn't there?
Yeah, we had a very a very keen group of members of staff. Encouraged by the management to have a number of activities. We had a little group that went cycling, for example, at weekends. And apart from a Christmas party for staff. There was a Christmas party for the staff's children. Staff's children. And which was run by members of staff and included conjurers and
I remember, it was wonderful.
And a meal for the children,
yeah.
which they thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah.
And also, talking of meals, of course, the staff could have their lunch in the refectory.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
At a very modest price.
Yeah.
We had a caterer called Mrs. Stocker who thought it was her duty to make sure that everyone on the staff had a good, hot nutritional meal, which would keep the staff healthy and not having to have time off for illness. And this was a very friendly arrangement that everyone enjoyed.
Yeah. And then they would do the catering if you had a function on. She would oversee that as well.
They did members' dinners.
Yes, yeah.
in the evenings.
Yes, yeah.
And committee members would lunch there as a committee.
Yeah.
And very well run and very well organised.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that was, I mean, that's the sort of thing you just don't hear about nowadays at all. It would be, you'd get a catering company come in, I expect. I imagine that's all stopped now, a long while ago probably. But
yeah. It was a very paternalistic.
Yes,
organisation.
Yes.
And very much appreciated by the staff.
Yeah.
And which was showed in the loyalty.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which worked both ways.
Yes, I remember going, when I was a little girl, going up to Savoy Place and with you, but being very struck that everybody knew you. And even though you were by that time, you were in quite a managerial position. But I remember that the cleaning ladies saying, "Oh, hello, Donald," to you. And, and you'd know them by their first name.
Well, that's how the whole place was. As it grew, it obviously got more difficult.
Yes,
for that to continue.
Yeah.
And of course, we opened the offices up in Hertfordshire.
Yes.
First of all in Hitchin.
Yeah.
And then in Stevenage.
Yeah. And was that because there wasn't enough physical space?
There wasn't enough stuff because we had the staff when I left was just over 500.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was including all the work being done on computers
and
what have you.
Yes.
Without which it would have been a lot more sort of staff needed than that.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Very interesting.
Well, I think that more or less summed up a life at the IE.
Yeah, I think it does.
A working life at
the IE. The only one story I just thought would be nice to record, just for posterity, would be about during the war when you saw the bomb being dropped in the Thames.
Oh, yeah. Well,
so were you on the roof of the IEE? The story.
We took turns fire watching, we called it.
Yeah.
Because incendiary bombs were being dropped and what have you, and there were three of us on duty one night and we went up onto the roof.
Yeah.
When the air raid warning sirens went. And because being a flat roof, that was obviously a vulnerable spot.
Yes, yeah.
And we're now armed with stirrup pumps to pump water onto the thing. And then suddenly we thought these German planes were being shot down.
Yeah.
Because they were coming down and exploding on the ground.
Mm.
And that was our first introduction to flying bombs.
Oh, yeah,
The V-1s, as they were called.
Yeah.
And one dropped on the Thames embankment.
Mm.
Just in the Thames itself, by Cleopatra's Needle.
Oh yeah,
which is just along from the IE.
Yeah,
And we got soaked with water because it blew all the water up
that high. Yeah,
And it was a warm evening, and we were in shirt sleeves.
But
we got soaking wet. With this water.
Yeah.
And of course, the next day we learned that far from shooting planes down, these were aimed at crushing and exploding.
Yeah.
It was the first flying bombs.
So you were lucky.
Yes.
Yeah.
But when you're 17 or 18. This is exciting.
Yeah, that must have been quite early on in the war then, mustn't it?
Oh,
it was.
Yeah, well, I joined the IE in 43.
Right, yeah.
So this was probably 44.
Yeah, so actually towards the end, really, yes. Yeah.
Towards the end of the war.
Yeah.
So, my life.
Your life.
And nearly death. At the IE.
Well, you live to tell a tale and become my dad as well, so thank you. Thanks, Dad, that's great.
Okay. Yeah, you can edit that, can you?
Yes, I can. Yeah.